It's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere.
Welcome to Book Talk Etc., a podcast bound to grow your TBR. I'm Tina from TBR Etc.
And I'm Renee from It's Book Talk.
This is a conversational podcast about books and more from two Midwest mood readers who are easily distracted by new releases. And today, we are delighted to talk about pop culture and nostalgia with podcaster and author Danny Pellegrino.
We'll share something that we've been loving lately, chat with Danny about his book, share some latest reads, and talk about pop culture and nostalgic books. If you enjoy listening, we'd love for you to follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. And if you have a quick minute, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or sharing us on social media. It truly helps us connect with other book lovers. Hey, Tina.
Hi, Renee. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am good. It is late in our world, real time, and I am so excited to finally get this conversation out to the people. We spoke to Danny last week or 2 weeks ago at this point.
Right. And
so today we're just kind of wrapping things up, making sure we got our book recommendations in there, but I'm so excited for our listeners to meet him.
Right. We had the best time talking. I think the problem was we could have talked for at least 2 hours. I'm just a rough estimate, 2 hours.
Oh, easily. And how this came about, I actually had met Danny a couple years ago at my friend's wedding, and I knew who he was. I'd listened to his podcast at that point for like a year or so, and I'm like, Tina, you're friends with Danny Pellegrino? She's like, yeah. And I had known about him, whatever. And so we went to this wedding, and Tina, my friend, had put us at the same table, and we weren't sitting next to each other, but I like moved place cards so that I was sitting next to him because I was like, I love you. You talk about Real Housewives. You talk about Bravo. Like, and we had the most fun and it was a great wedding. But obviously he then is a big podcaster. I've been listening for years and he's coming out with his book in March. And I'm like, hey, let's talk books. Let's talk about your book. We'd love to chat with you. You know, we love essay. We love memoir. And so we had a really fun time. But we did want to give you a quick setup at the top of the show to let you know that this episode will run a little bit differently than our normal episodes. We chat with Danny in the beginning of the show, and we talk about loving latelys. We talk about his book. We chat about how reading plays into his life. And then Renee and I will end the show with our book recommendations and shelf edition.
And we hope you enjoy this conversation. We chat about the writing process, narrating his audiobook, grief, nostalgia, and a whole lot more. It was so much fun, and we really hope that you enjoy it.
We do, and make sure to check out his podcast, Everything Iconic with Danny Pellegrino, and his book. We will talk about it here in a bit, but it is How Do I Unremember This? And that one comes out on March 8th. Enjoy the conversation, and we'll be back. Hey, book talkers. Today, we're very excited to welcome our special guest, Danny Pellegrino. Danny is a writer slash comedian slash content creator and host of the podcast Everything Iconic with Danny Pellegrino, which is a comedic pop culture podcast. He is also a fellow Midwesterner at heart and an absolute delight. And he's the author of the upcoming book, How Do I Unremember This? Unfortunately, True Stories. Listening to his podcast is one of the highlights of every week, and I'm thrilled to welcome him to the show. Danny, welcome to Book Talk, Etc.
Hi, Tina and Renee. I'm so happy to be here, and I know the show is new, so I'm so honored to be one of the first. So thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much.
I want to also give a special welcome to you. I am so excited to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here, and we have, I know, so much to talk about, and I'm excited to talk about books because I love reading, and on my show, I cover pop culture, and occasionally I'll do like a book episode, or I'll have different authors on, but I love reading, and so I'm excited to get to talk about this.
And that's literally what we do. We love to talk about books. We love to read. Like, that's our gig. So I'm excited for you. Your book is coming out so soon. How are you feeling?
I know. I'm very excited. I'm very nervous. I'm just now starting to hear from people who have read the book. Mm-hmm. And for so long, no one had, other than myself and my editor. There was no one really who had read it. And I don't know, you second guess everything. You think, oh, are people going to understand this or get this? Or are they going to laugh where I was hoping they would laugh? Or are they going to be emotional where I was hoping they would be emotional? And so it's exciting to hear from people now that there's different people getting their hands on the book. And so I'm just so excited. And it feels surreal to me because, like I said, I love reading and I was a ghostwriter previously, and I've always dreamed of doing my own book. So finally getting to write my own stories. And as a ghostwriter, you're constantly writing in someone else's voice. And as a creative person, that can be challenging because sometimes I would want to put in a joke there or a reference or something, but you can't because the person you're writing on behalf of wouldn't necessarily write that way or speak that way. And so just being able to do that was so incredibly creatively fulfilling. And then now to be able to get it in people's hands and in front of them is really exciting.
We should be exciting. We both read it prior to the show, so we're going to chat a little bit about it here in a bit.
Thank you for taking the time.
Yes, your book is our mutual latest read, and we have a lot to say, but we want to start out the way we always do with our loving latelys. And Danny, what's your loving lately?
So my loving lately, it's a TV show, Saved by the Bell. It's a reboot of a 90s TV show, and I recently binged it, and it's just very silly. It makes me laugh, and I don't know about you all. There are all these amazing TV shows, and it seems overwhelming to try to watch them all, and oftentimes I feel like the heavier stuff gets a lot of the talk and the chatter and everything online. And people are always saying, watch Yellow Jackets mm-hmm. or Dexter, you know, all these heavier things, which are wonderful, great shows. But I find myself gravitating towards the sillier stuff right now. So I watched the Saved by the Bell reboot with really low expectations because the original is so cheesy, and looking back on it, it's dated. And the reboot, though, has really hilarious writers that they're sort of mocking it while also paying reverence to it. And so I find it really silly and fun. And another show that's kind of in the same vein is a show called Abbott Elementary, which is on ABC. And so that's kind of where I'm at recently. I need just fun and things that I can watch and check out to and put on an episode before bed and drift off to sleep.
Yeah, I think we all kind of need a little bit of levity now and again, especially I know you'd moved and you had a lot going on and, you know, the stress with, I'm sure, the book coming out. So yeah, that sounds good to me. I was never a Saved by the Bell kind of kid. I don't know why. I just missed it.
How dare you? That's a wrap on this.
Oh, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap on this.
Cut. Sorry. I have to be true to who I am.
It's good though. And the reboot is run by this woman, Tracy Wigfield, who was a writer on 30 Rock. And then she also created this show called Great News, which was about a local news team. And it ran for, I think, 2 or 3 seasons. But even if you don't watch Saved by the Bell, like maybe check out some of her other shows. If you've never seen Saved by the Bell, check out this show called Great News. It's really funny. And it's the same sort of similar type of comedy.
I'm glad you said something about Abbott Elementary because I keep seeing commercials for it. And then I was thinking, oh, that does look really funny. And I'll have to remember to watch that. And then, you know, it gets filed away. So
yeah, it's really good. It's only been, I think, a handful of episodes so far. But a friend recommended it to me and it's really silly and funny. It's very much like The Office in a way, but it's about a school and these school teachers. And there's also a lot of heart. And I think it's fascinating how they're tackling teachers, and it kind of presents some of the problems and things that teachers face in a really funny way. It's great.
Now that you're saying this, I imagine the marketing. I can picture it. I thought it was animated when you first mentioned it, but now I'm like, no, I know what this is. It's new. When you said a handful of shows, I'm like, ah, yes, which feels like accessible. Like I can get into something that only has a couple shows out, you know, not like a whole couple seasons back. Well, My Loving Lately actually is also a television show, and I picked this before I listened to one of your latest episodes, Danny, but My Loving Lately is Search Party, and talk about a dark show getting a lot of play. And this show started off very easy to describe. It was about a group of college friends who were on this hunt for one of their missing classmates, but in its subsequent seasons, it's gone completely off the rails in the best way, though. I don't know how the writers do it. I don't know what they're thinking, but it's so, it's oddly funny, but like disturbing. And it makes you go, what it does, it kind of watches like a psychological thriller might read. So it really speaks to me in that way. It's a dark comedy about 4 self-absorbed 20-somethings. And they basically get entangled in this mystery. And that's how it begins. I can't even begin to describe where it's at now from how it started. There's 5 seasons total, and the final 10 episodes just dropped on HBO Max this month in January when we're recording, and I highly recommend it. I think the characters are oddly endearing. They're clumsy and kind of obsessed with themselves, and sometimes they make you cringe, but they have heart, and I'm rooting for them in different places, and I think this show is very much centered on the millennial experience. So they talk a lot about their jobs, identity, feeling aimless, social media. I thought it was super clever. And a lot of the episodes end on a cliffhanger. So this is the kind of show you just want to sit there and binge. I am not up to date on the latest season, but I definitely will be soon. This is Search Party. And Danny, I know you had a writer on the show on your podcast recently. What are your thoughts on this show?
Yeah, I love this show too. I think what's fascinating about it is, first of all, each season is kind of a different genre. There was one whole season that was very much like a courtroom drama film. And then, yeah, it kind of dips its toe into everything from thriller, horror. And it started very much as a comedy. Mm-hmm. And now I think it sort of has morphed into so many different things. And I find it fascinating because you just never know what you're going to get. You could turn on the episode and it's like, what is going to happen now? And it's so rare to watch it. Anything and to just not even know what genre you're going to be in that episode. And so that's really fun.
Yeah.
I'm not caught up on the, I think 1 or 2 episodes into the last season. So I haven't seen how it ends.
I know. I can't wait to, I have no idea how they're going to land this plane, but I trust that they will.
I don't know how I'm going to squeeze all these shows in because I haven't watched that either. It sounds so good.
I think you might like it.
But that sounds really good. I'm going to watch that one. My Loving Lately is in honor of you, Danny, and your love of movies, which I also love movies. And when you talked in one of your podcast episodes recently and in your book about your love of going to the movies, and that's how I am. My husband and I both love going to the movies. And My Loving Lately is a movie we just went to last Sunday, Nightmare Alley, starring Bradley Cooper, Toni Collette, and Kate Blanchett. Danny, have you seen this movie yet?
No, but I'm so glad I want you to tell me about it because I was I just was looking into it. I saw some interview with Bradley Cooper and he was sort of explaining, is it like a thriller? Is it?
Yes, it's a crime thriller.
Okay.
It's set in 1940s New York. The backdrop at first is a carnival, like a very, you know, old school throw up tents carnival. And there is some really creepy happenings going on there. And there's some, you know, it's not by any means politically correct. And they don't treat the people who are some of the acts very well at all. I mean, it's truly traumatic. I looked at my husband and I was like, oh no, I hope the whole movie isn't like this. However, it's not. Bradley Cooper finds himself, he plays Stanton, finds himself becoming a part of this carnival. He connects with a mentalist there, played by Toni Collette, and kind of becomes very attached to what she's doing and learning the trade, so to speak, of how to basically trick people into thinking they can read their minds and that they are in touch with, you know, people from another life, alternate. So like a psychic, which my husband kept looking at me because I go to psychics and he was looking at me like, mm-hmm. And soon things start happening. And I don't want to give too much away. I will say Bradley Cooper, his character decides that he can be bigger and better than these little carnivals. And he takes a protege with him and he hits big cities everywhere. So it does leave that small town carnival setting. And that's where the thriller aspect comes in because of who he meets. And it becomes clear that other people have their eye on him and maybe taking him for what he's worth. And it's a very psychological, twisty kind of movie. I loved it. I loved it.
I'm going to watch it.
It goes to unexpected places. It's kind of gory, though. I don't know. I mean, you go to a lot of movies that probably wouldn't bother you. But for listeners out there, just, you know, it's gory. It's violent in places. And the way it's filmed, it's very realistic. So that was Nightmare Alley, starring Bradley Cooper, which that's all I really needed to know when I was going through the movies. And like my husband and I have to agree And I'm like, oh, Bradley Cooper's right. in this.
That's
so,
enough for
yeah,
me.
We're going.
I don't watch movies, but I even like Bradley Cooper. I'll dip in if he's starring.
Well, and not to get too vulgar on everyone, but I the thing that I was reading about it is that he's naked in it. That was like the big headline was like in Nightmare Alley.
Oh.
Did you not notice?
So I don't know.
No,
I'm
not remembering that.
How do you miss it?
I need to.
Tells me something.
I don't know because I need to rethink. I need to think about that. Maybe. No, there's no way I missed it.
I haven't seen it. It was like the big headline. Like he was nervous to get naked in it. You know how they pick out one little
thing. Right, of course.
But it might, who knows?
Of course.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right. Well, moving on. We've got book talk to do.
So both Renee and I read Danny's book for our latest read. Again, it's called How Do I Unremember This? Unfortunately, True Stories, which I actually love the title. Very, very clever. And again, it comes out on March 8th. But Danny, tell us about your book.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for saying that you love the title. It was a whole process getting it to that title because originally I wanted it to be called Detours. And then the publisher thought that sounded too much like construction metaphors and people wouldn't get it. And they thought it was too traffic sounding. And so there were a lot of conversations about the title that were really stressful. And I feel like more than anything throughout the process of the book, like that was the big trouble was the title. Mm. And at one point it was maybe going to be called something with a swear word in it. And I didn't want it to have a swear word in the title because I didn't want to misrepresent it. And then it was a whole thing. Anyway, the book is a collection of stories. I wanted it to be sort of my version of David Sedaris's writing, which I love and sort of grew up with. And I would often tell these stories on my podcast. You know, I cover a lot of pop culture and reality TV and stuff. And oftentimes I would take a little what I would call a detour and tell a story about growing up or a family vacation or a date that I had or a thing with my situation with my boyfriend or something like that. And I noticed when I went on tour and when I would talk to people, it was like, those were the things that most people would ask me about. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that I wanted to do this collection and I always dreamed about being able to do my own short story collection or essay, whatever you want to call it, collection. And so I had known pretty early on in my podcast that I wanted to put these stories together and be able to expand them. And so that's what the book became. And there are a lot of things I've never shared on my show. And then there are some stories that I maybe briefly touched on that I am able to expand on. And so it's been really, it was really fun to write.
It's funny too, because I listen to your podcast and I feel like, I mean, I know you. I'm like, I've, you know, Linda Pellegrino, we know about your mom. That's very, my main takeaway, it's very much you. It's very, very much in your voice. Oh. And but at the same time, it didn't feel all about you, even though it is your memoir. It didn't feel all about you. I was able to relate to a lot of it. You and I are similar in age, and it unlocked so many memories for me. You talked about Napster, radar detectors when driving, Devon Sawa from Casper, sleepovers. I'm like, oh my gosh, it just put me right back to my childhood. So you really did a great job with balancing humor and being serious and just kind of irreverent. And obviously I would say this even if you weren't here, but I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. I really wanted the pop culture to come through. Mm-hmm. I've always been a pop culture junkie. And so early on, I remember asking my editor, like, are there going to be too many references in this? And we kind of decided, you know, if people don't understand a movie that I reference on page 7, hopefully they'll know the one on page 8. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's tons of pop culture littered throughout it and a lot of nostalgia too. I'm a nostalgia junkie. Even the cover, I wanted it to look like a Trapper Keeper from the 90s. Mm-hmm. Like I want it to be fun. And then I think a lot of the sort of drama and that kind of stuff ended up coming through unexpectedly, even to me when writing, where it was like, I wasn't expecting to write a story about grief, mm-hmm. but then I would start to tell us another story that I thought was just going to be this funny, silly date story. And then as I was writing and unpacking, I noticed there were these other kind of deeper things coming through. And I tried not to shy away from it. I don't think it's a very heavy book, but I tried not to shy away from any of that. And one of my favorite books as a kid was Bridge to Terabithia. And I was really, it like really stuck with me because it's a book for kids, but it really deals with grief and death. And I remember even as a kid really loving it. And it's so fascinating to me that the author, Catherine Patterson, didn't shy away from that heaviness in a book for children. And I think that's what makes it so special. And so I kind of had that in the back of my mind. I'm not comparing my book to her. She's a brilliant writer. But I try to always think that of like, it's okay to embrace the darkness and the heaviness and all that.
Yeah. I think what I'm hearing you say about your book is exactly how I felt when I put it down. And my huge takeaway, as soon as I stopped reading, because we do that all the time, Tina and I, you know, to prepare for the podcast, like, what do I think about this book? And as soon as I finished, I was like, to me, your book was just like the very best sitcoms. It was laugh out loud funny. And I wish I so bad, I don't want to spoil any of your book, but I want to tell, there were some parts in the beginning involving the family road trip. I was cracking up. And then a few pages later, as soon as you started talking about your grandma, I lost my grandma in 2018 and she was just, we were so close. I started crying and I had to put my Kindle down for a minute. And then later on, I was laughing. And then that combined with the nostalgia, because I grew up also in my young, you know, when I was younger, I lived for Fridays when People magazine would come in the mail. And so all of your the Friday night football games, I'm in Ohio. I grew up in a small town north of Dayton. I'm now in Columbus, but I know that small town Ohio Friday night football games and sleepovers, like Tina said, and Borders Bookstore was just, I mean, you nailed the nostalgia factor. It was so good, I think. But you also put in plenty of current pop culture references. I just think all audiences will love it.
I hope so. I mean, I hope so. And to do a book, you have to write a proposal and sell it to the publisher and try to get a publisher on board. And as I was meeting with a lot of publishers, they wanted me to do like Housewives books or a Bravo book. And I never wanted to do that. As much as I love reading that and I love on my show, I get to talk about all Bravo and really recap Housewives and all that kind of thing. I wanted this book to be a love letter to pop culture and to the Midwest. And I was meeting with some librarians the other day for this conference thing. And one of them said how the family road trip that you're describing, which was a story that spans a few different chapters of the book, but she had said, she's like, everyone in the Midwest has done that drive from Ohio to Florida at one point. Mm-hmm. And it made me so happy because it's like, I wanted people who grew up like that to read it and be like, oh yeah, I did that drive. Whether they're from Michigan,
Illinois,
Ohio,
hello?
Wherever. Even, yeah, Illinois. It's like people, we all did that drive, that family road trip. So.
Oh, totally. Your parents also, I would love to have dinner with them.
I'm so nervous, Renee, for them to, they haven't read it yet.
Oh,
I'm so nervous. No, they have not. And I am very nervous about it. I think they'll be fine. But my mom is like, you know, she's typical like Catholic, sweep it under the rug and pretend everything is like perfect. And so I know she'll get mad at something.
I think you reference in the book, you were like, I'm thinking of a time where you're talking about a friend and the crazy thing they asked you to do for this bridal party. And you were like, sorry, friend, like if you're reading this, like hope we can still be cool.
Oh, I'm also, yes. I know. I'm also the only two people I'm nervous about reading this book is my very best friend and my mom, because there's this wedding story that I was very hesitant to put in, but ultimately I thought it was fun. And so I included it. So I'm nervous for her to read that. But both of those people are like my two favorite people in the entire universe. It's like my mother and
that
my best friend.
That comes through, though. I think it definitely comes through in your writing. Mm-hmm. I would, not that you need my validation, but it's funny we picked out those two parts. Like, oh, those are the two parts you're worried about.
I changed everyone's names, too. So other than my parents, which I couldn't change their names, everyone else's names are different because I didn't want anyone mad at me. I even mention our mutual friend, Tina, is mentioned in the acknowledgments, and she's one of my
And I was like, oh, I'm sure that's me, Tina, not the other Tina. No, I'm kidding. But yes, that was very fun. And you did such a good job. You mentioned the detours part, and this was actually one of Renee's questions for you. How difficult was that to structure it, to kind of figure out what pop culture elements to include?
Almost every chapter has these little boxes where they're just sort of a sidetrack story. And it was hard because I didn't want to necessarily take people out of the larger story I was trying to tell, but I also wanted it to feel like my show, and I wanted to be able to just go off on a tangent about JC from NSYNC or whatever it was that I wanted to go on a tangent about. And so I tried to use them sort of sparingly. And then also at the end, very end of the process, I tried to keep reading it. And I hope that they don't take people out too much, and I hope they add to it It was interesting. I did the audiobook very recently, and reading it out loud was a interesting way to like sort of see how those bits fit into the larger narrative. But I tried to use them sparingly, and there were a lot of times I took them out, or there were even more of them in the initial manuscript, and I scaled back or cut them out or cut them down. And then there were even a couple that I expanded on. There's one place where I kind of go through my childhood crushes or the things that were my sexual awakening as a teenager. And I just kept adding to that. And there was a certain point where I was like, my editor, I think, was like,
we
okay,
got the picture. We got it. We're with you.
But I just kept emailing her and I was like, add Devin Sawa or add Tony Danza from Who's the Boss. It was crazy.
That was such a blast from the past, though, that particular section. And I love that every time I turned my Kindle page and saw Detour, I got a little excited because I never knew what you were going to detour into. I loved those.
Well, you know, I'm a big memoir fan, and I don't consider this a memoir even in the traditional sense, because I don't really go into my career or anything like that. It's like these are just supposed to be vignettes, like life vignettes. But my issue with a lot of memoirs is they feel so, you always know you're going to start. Like, I was born here. And then it's nice to be surprised as you're reading something and not know exactly where it's going to go. And even as I was putting this book together, I wanted them to not be chronological, the stories, because I wanted it to jump around. And so at the beginning, you might have a story of me when I was in sixth grade. And then later, you might have a story of me when I was in kindergarten or something. Or, you know, it would just jump around. And I didn't want it to feel like, okay, we're at his teenage years now, and then we're going to get to his 20s. And that annoys me when I read any memoir. I was just reading Barbara Walters' Audition, which is like this massive book. And yeah, you almost want to skip ahead to when you got to know that person. So at the beginning, although she tells these very interesting stories about her childhood, it's just, you know, the beats. And so I found myself reading it on an airplane and being like, okay, can I skip this chapter? When do we get to The View? Or when do we get to 2020 or whatever?
No, I completely agree with you. Sometimes when they're chronological like that, I'm like, oh, I don't want to go back to your childhood. Like, I can know a little bit about it. I get why it's important, but like, give me a snippet and then let's get to some of the good stuff. Right.
Especially a celebrity. I hate when a celebrity just follows that exact format. It bugs me.
Anything else, Renee, to ask about the book?
How was the experience making your own audiobook?
Oh, it was much more challenging than I thought it would be. It was hours, and you have to keep doing it over and over again. And so it was exhausting. I had sort of naively thought it'd be real quick and easy, and I did it right before the holiday. So everything was already hectic. My boyfriend and I were moving into a house for the first time. And so life was just like crazy at the time. Mm-hmm. It was a bad timing kind of thing, but it was really fun. And I haven't heard it yet, but I'm excited to hear how it turned out. Yeah, it was just harder than I thought. You know, the whole process of writing a book is so long and time consuming. And so at least by the time that it was to do the audiobook, we're sort of at the finish line almost. It's like, okay, well, all the hard stuff is over. And although it was challenging, at least the writing of it was done. But there was the most stressful thing happened with the audiobook, because there were three little typos that we noticed when we were reading the audiobook. And because of when it was happening, and there's all these printing issues, so the book had to be at the printer earlier than we had planned. And I was so stressed that those typos wouldn't be fixed for the final printing. And I think you all got the advance copy, so that had plenty of typos in and stuff. But at this point, I was so worried, because there was one typo on page 2, and I was like, there can't be a typo on page 2. I was like, it can't happen.
Feels
like
a little early for that.
Insane. And so it was this big, my last day of recording the audiobook was the day before everyone was off for the holidays. And so my editor was kind enough to be like on the phone with the printers to try to get it fixed before it officially went to print. And so luckily we got it fixed, and who knows, maybe there'll be another typo in there, but the audiobook gives you a chance to see all that and see sort of what the final will be. And of course, it's such a long process. There's always things that slip through because you're always adding or changing or something. And so there's always going to be a chance for there to be some typos. And I was just happy we got it fixed. And it was thanks to the audiobook.
Oh, because you were reading out loud
that I was able to fix that typo on page 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you see it. I mean, you see like what went to the printer. That's what
you're like,
read
wait a minute, no.
It's hard to let go of it too, though, because even since the ARC of the bookie, the advanced copy that reviewers get and people get, it's like there were things I changed, and I wanted to, I wanted the ending to hit harder. And so you always kind of want to change at a certain point. You just have to say, okay, this is it. We're done.
Well, don't worry. I have my pre-order in, so I'll take a look at the final copy.
Yes. That's what I was just thinking. I'm curious to see what might be changed when the book actually gets here. I do have one other question before, and we do want you to share your latest reads that you brought, but you did do such a good job of giving some really, what sounds like was probably some traumatic experiences growing up and throughout like childhood and teenage years. But you, like you said, you had them kind of interspersed in your story, which I really liked. So I'm wondering, like you did talk about, those experiences shape you and they stay with you. Is there anything that you would really like to unremember?
Oh my gosh. I think ultimately, no, but there were certainly times, I mean, the whole book is littered with these embarrassing stories. And there's a coming out story that where a classmate sort of outed me. And it was, I think it was like really funny how it happened looking back, but it was traumatic at the time. And so maybe something like that, I think would be, I sort of wish I could unremember. But the other things you sort of look at, and it's like that shaped me. And so it's like, I'm happy to remember it. I think all those stories, a lot of the stories I've been explaining as sort of like the cocktail stories we all tell, we all have those family holidays or family stories that you retell all the time when you get together with people, or they happen with friends too. You get together with an old friend and you're like, remember when that happened in high school? And I think it's important to keep those stories alive, and they help us connect. I have a close friend who I've started to lose contact with, but it's like, I know that when I hop on the phone with him, we can talk about that thing that happened to us in college.
And that's how it reads. It is those highlights. It's those kind of cocktail stories, and there's highs and there's lows. Yeah. Was it tough to read some of those as you're recording the audiobook?
Yeah. The stuff about my grandma was the hardest to read for the audiobook, and writing the story. There's one particular story that I just did not expect to be about my grandmother at all. It was just a story that happened right after she had passed and before I had gone to the funeral. So I knew that was like the timeline of it, but going back and writing it, it was like, oh my God, like I had all this deep down grief that was sort of unprocessed. And so writing it and reading it just brought back all these memories of my grandmother, who I never really felt like I got to say goodbye to because she was really sick, but it happened after I moved away. And so my memories of her are different than everyone else in my family, who's all very close, and they all live in Ohio and close by to each other. And it's like they remember her for that whole year of time when she was getting sick. It was even a little over a year, I think. But I had conversations on the phone with her, but I just remember her as one of my best, closest friends, people to me. Like her and I were so close. And so coming to grips with that whole thing was hard to read and to write, but also very cathartic in so many ways. And she was also, I'd say, the biggest loss I've ever had. And there's a story I tell in there where I had, you just mentioned psychics, Renee, and I had a sit down interview with Teresa Caputo from who's the Long Island medium. And it was like all this grief came up for my grandma in the middle of the interview. And I was like fetal position crying. You could see it on YouTube, the interview, because it's up. And it's just like, so it was so much that came up about my grandmother. And I don't know, all these like little experiences was like, wow, I'm like, was really holding on to a lot with her. And I don't think people really discuss grief much. And we're all expected, if somebody passes, to just have the funeral or the wake or the services, and then you move on. And you're just, everything's supposed to be good after that. And it's like, what if it's taking you longer to process that? But then you kind of hold it in because you're embarrassed or you're afraid people are going to judge you or whatever. And it's weird how grief is still, I think, a very taboo topic, and people don't process it in the same ways, but we're expected to.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that. That's very true. There's a graphic memoir, you might like it, Danny, called Dancing at the Pity Party, I read last year, that I had the same conversation with a friend on Instagram about people not wanting to talk about grief. And so she had recommended that book, and it was really good.
What's it called?
Dancing at the Pity Party.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to check it out. I'm typing it in my phone right now.
Well, you should be so, so proud. It is going to be a hit. I'm so excited for everybody else to get their hands on it and to experience all of the wonderful things that I think we experienced while reading it. And I hate to like make a hard left.
Yeah, let's do the hard left.
We wanted to bring you on this show because although your podcast recaps the Real Housewives episode each week, among other things, you also talk about everything pop culture, including books. So what books do you like to read?
I read a little bit of everything. I love a celebrity memoir and I love an essay collection, of course. You had asked me to bring a couple books that I'm in the process of reading or just recently finished. There's one that I loved called Built to Fail. It's the inside story of Blockbuster Video. And I love the nostalgia of it, but it's also a very fascinating look at how Blockbuster crumbled, which I think all of us went to Blockbusters in the 90s and it seemed like they were unstoppable. There was one literally on every corner. And it's fascinating to me to see some of the business decisions that they made that kind of kept them from becoming Netflix. I feel like at one time they could have been Netflix, and they even tried to do the at-home sending DVDs in the mail thing. And they just did. They made a few bad decisions that ultimately crumbled the company. And so it's a business book, but I think it also, for nostalgia junkies, it's really also fascinating. So it's Built to Fail. So I just read that one.
That actually transitions me really well into one of my first books. And your book, again, made me feel really nostalgic. My pick was The 90s by Chuck Klosterman. This book is a deep dive about the entire decade to films, music, celebrities, politics.
I loved that book too. I just read it. It was almost one of the books that I brought here. Yeah, because it's so uniquely written. And I mean, the writer is great, but
oh my God. And the cover on that book. I think Renee looked at it too and was like, this is phenomenal. This cover is really good.
My book, I think, Danny, if you have read it, I bet you loved it. It's Sex and the City and Us by Jennifer Armstrong.
Did I read it? Wait, do you have the cover in front of you? It sounds familiar.
No, it's just it's all black with the martini glass in pink.
Okay. No, I don't think I have read it.
I loved it so much. I don't know how I missed that, but I know you love Sex and the City, and if you haven't read that, I think you would like it.
I do. I do have a problem that you're both giving me more things to read, but I'm happy and excited, but also I already have a full bookshelf of things
I know. That's kind of our thing.
Are you physical book readers or what do you prefer?
Audio. I'm an audiobook junkie, but I like to collect physical books. I like to have them in my hand. I like to see them because I think it is a different experience in listening and reading a physical copy, but I'm never sitting down. I'm always doing stuff with the baby. It's a whole thing. So audiobooks are my way to go.
I just started significantly reading on audio 2 years ago. I think when the start of, it was spring of 2020 and my dog died and I could not concentrate, but I could pop in, my AirPod and listen. And now I mainly do audiobooks or Kindle. I read on my Kindle.
I had the same experience at the beginning of the pandemic. I could not concentrate on a book. It was so strange and new. It was like, and I've always been a reader and suddenly I just couldn't, I would read one chapter and then I'd start and my brain would go elsewhere.
Yeah.
I like the physical though. I'm like a physical. I need, and I like to use a pen and circle things and bookmark things and all of that. My second book, I suppose, I sort of brought three. One of them is a Goosebumps book. Now I'm sort of playing around with the idea of maybe doing a young adult thing, writing something. And so I was trying to look back at some of the things that I read and loved as a preteen or around that age, 11, 12, 13-ish. And so I refound some of these Goosebumps books, which were sort of a horror collection, although reading them back, they're not very scary.
I was wondering how they'd hold up.
They're made for kids. And yeah, they're fun. I mean, they're fun. I remember thinking of them as these big, hefty books as a preteen. And yeah, they're real quick, easy little reads. But yeah, so that was one. And then the other one, which is a little bit more adult, but it's called Swish and it's by Joel Dirfner. And it's an essay collection that I read after college. I moved to Chicago before I came out of the closet. I remember getting this at a Borders Books. And it was the first time I really had seen someone like me on the page. It was rare to see an LGBTQ author. And this was around 2009. And there just wasn't a whole ton of representation, even though it doesn't seem that long ago. This was the first time I was like, oh, he's like me. He loved pop culture and he's gay. And it seemed like, oh, my life could be okay. At the time, you just don't know. There's not a whole lot of examples, and not to get too deep, but yeah, so that was one of them that I picked
we
up.
We definitely, you know, representation matters. And I think YA and middle grade literature has come such a long way. And I'm so thankful that my daughter is going to be able to grow up seeing, you know, biracial characters on the page and, you know, that other people will be able to have that experience of being seen.
Isn't it so fascinating? Apparently, I was just hearing that a lot of in the YA market, these diverse stories are selling so much better. And it's crazy to me because growing up as a teen or preteen, there was nothing. There was very little diversity. There was stuff, but it wasn't. Now I feel like they have LGBTQ rom-coms for young teenagers.
And for us.
It's like wild to me. Yeah, we can all enjoy them too, but it's crazy to me that it's, and they're very popular and they sell like crazy. And so this book, Swish, it's an oldie and I haven't reread it in a while. I'm going to reread it though, because it's brought back so many memories and I'm curious to see how it holds up. But in 2009, this like changed my life. It changed my whole life.
I have to pick that up. I have not heard of it. I have to look into it.
Yeah.
Hold it up to the camera so we can see the cover. Oh, it's black. Well,
There's no cover. I lost the, you know, the cover that goes, the jacket.
All right. Well, I'll look it up.
There's a few different books called Swish. So this is Joel Dufner. And my apologies if it does not hold up, because I hope your listeners aren't going to get it and be like, oh my God, that was so, you know, sometimes you look back on things. And
we'll give
like,
it
wow,
grace, though. We'll give
well.
You grace with that. I think we've okay, all good. Read our fair share of celebrity memoirs. Do you have any favorites?
Oh, that's a great question. I just got through Barbara Walters' audition, which I enjoyed, although it's really extensive, which is part of the fun, but also can be part of feeling like you're climbing a mountain. I loved Katie Couric's recent memoir. I thought it was really honest and not as glossy as people, I think, wanted hers to be. Jessica Simpson's memoir was so fascinating to me because she names names, and I was shocked that they didn't make her cut so much of what was in that book.
Same. That book was so good. I was like, my eyes were like falling out of my head. I'm like, oh my God, I could read it like every month.
I still need to read that one.
It's so juicy, and I cannot believe that the publisher didn't make her take out the stories about John Mayer or the stories about Nick or, I mean, some of the exes or even everyone. It was wild to me because I know how strict they could be with taking out names and everything. And so I was shocked, and it was good. It was a great read. And then Mariah Carey, she worked with a writer, Michaela Angela Davis, who I thought was great. And I loved her book. I love her though. So.
Oh, I do too. I haven't read it. I can't believe it. I fell off my radar. Okay.
Oh,
good.
I'm
glad we asked this question then.
It's her, but it's also, it's very her, but it's also written by this brilliant, it's co-written or ghostwritten by this brilliant writer. And so it's so, I loved it. I loved it. Can't recommend. And if you like audiobooks, Mariah's audiobook is like another level. She sings certain parts of her songs and it's so, so good. If you want an audiobook, hers an audiobook.
Noted.
Oh, okay. Does Jessica Simpson narrate her own?
She does.
Book? Yeah, and Jessica's is great too. And Jessica's audiobook came with actually some songs with it. There was one, Party of One, that she released with the audiobook that I think is beautiful that no one has really talked about or listened to. But Mariah's is just a different level. And I think from what I understand reading interviews with Mariah, she like really wanted to put a different spin on the audiobook because she's so known for her voice and everything. So she really tried to do some different things with it. So it's good and fascinating.
I am almost finished with Ross Matthews' celebrity memoir, Name Drop. Have you read that one?
Is it good? No, is it good?
Yeah, it's real. I'm listening to it and he narrates. Okay. And I've laughed several times. I was taking my dog for a walk this morning and listening, and he's funny. I've never watched RuPaul's Drag Race. I haven't watched him on that, but he's really funny.
Oh, I have to check it out. I met him recently, and he was so incredibly nice. And
I'm glad to hear that because I loved him on television. I like that he holds up in person.
I did the Drew Barrymore show, and he's sort of like her. I don't want to say sidekick or whatever, but he's sort of like her. He's on there a lot. I think he's on there every day, actually. But he, mm-hmm. I was so nervous, and he was so sweet and like came up to me and just was talking to me and making me relax and everything.
Oh my gosh, I could literally sit here and ask you about every person you've met ever.
I have so many questions. I would love to. Yeah.
Well, why do you think I stalked Danny down at the wedding? I was like, I need you to be my friend. Please sit with me. I need to know everything.
That wedding was so fun. I love Tina and Chris.
Well, thank you so much, Danny. And be sure to check out his book and get your pre-orders in now. It comes out on March 8th. And Danny, can you tell the listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter and Instagram. And I just have to say thank you. This was such a pleasure. I love getting to talk about books and writing and all that stuff. So I am so grateful you had me on. And I hope to be in the Midwest soon. And so we can all hang out and do this again in person. But pre-order my book, How Do I Unremember This, on Amazon or IndieBound if you want to get it from your local bookstore. And thank you. And I like the, I've been trying to decide if I should tell people to get the audiobook or the hardcover. I think I like the hardcover.
I'm going
to
go hardcover.
That's the gross thing to say at the end of this. But I just feel like
get it for yourself.
I like the hardcover. And the hardcover has some it has some little drawings my boyfriend did. So I feel like.
I was wondering. They were in the galley we got too, the little drawings.
They were in the ebook.
Yeah.
Oh, I love mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, he did a couple other ones too that will be in the final version. But he did all those. I was like bugging him. I'm like, okay, now draw these two dogs.
No, not like that.
He was like, what? What do you want? Yeah. He's like, what? And they'll make sense to once you read it.
That's amazing. I wondered how you got a picture of a certain childhood game, paper game in the beginning. I don't want to say what it is, but did he, so he drew that.
He drew that. Yeah, he drew that. And that was, so that, what you're referencing, it's called a cootie catcher. It's a paper fortune teller. And that was the most important image to have, I thought, because I think it's hard to explain what that is. And some people, I think once you see it, you're like, oh yeah,
we all know what that is.
I didn't know it was called that though. Now I'm thinking, what did we call it? Regional differences.
I didn't either, but as soon as I saw the picture, I was like, and you described it, I was like, oh yeah, we did that.
There are a million different names for it, but cootie catcher is like was my favorite one of the name. But some people call it a paper fortune teller.
All right. Well, thank you. I mean, it's time. I'm so sad. Good thing you had a hard cutoff. I'd be here until like 6 p.m. just chit-chatting with you. So this is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the book that I read that gave me a ton of nostalgia was The 90s by Chuck Klosterman. This book is a very deep dive into the decade, and he tackles things that are funny. He tackles things that are thought-provoking. He gives us all the nostalgia and basically unpacks everything that made up the decade of the 90s. And I'm talking it's politics, it's music, it's movies, it's actors, it's pop culture, it's celebrity, everything. And I think, honestly, anybody who's reading this who either grew up in the 90s or who is a Gen Xer will find something to be like, oh my God, I remember that. I haven't thought about this in so many years. I was absolutely impressed with the level of research that he put into this. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I'm talking like beverages he would talk about. Like, do you remember Clear Coke or Clear Pepsi?
Yes. I totally remember that. I don't think it was around for long, but
It was around for like a few months, but he talked about like what about the culture made this clear beverage like that and Zima appealing.
Zima, yes.
Right. Yeah. And he talked about TV. He talked about, you know, how at the time, right, Renee loves this, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have the internet really. And so it was, hey, you're watching on TV, Seinfeld, that's what's on. Or you're watching Full House or whatever you're watching, that is just what's on. And how it's this really, really unique era where we remember life before the internet, but now we're internet natives. So we can use it really, really well. We're kind of this very unique, in this unique space. I really enjoyed this. My favorite parts, probably not surprising anyone, were the times where he talked about Nirvana and music. He talked about rap too, and he talked about Tupac and the East Coast versus West Coast rappers and all of that. One critique of this that I thought was so jarring and bizarre is that I listened to this book and Chuck Klosterman narrates. I'll do He's not a great narrator. He has a very unique voice. I'm not saying I have the best vocal performance in the world, but his voice is odd, right? And I literally stopped listening at one point and I looked it up. I'm like, who's narrating this? Why did they hire this man? I'm like, oh my goodness, it's the author.
Oh no.
because he also had J.D. Jackson for some of it. And I'm like, oh, well, why don't we have J.D. do the entire thing?
Yeah, that's a difference. Mm-hmm.
I finally figured it out. It's because he was narrating the footnotes and the in between the chapters, which actually is pretty smart because you'd have this narration and then you would have beautiful J.D. Jackson's voice, mm-hmm. like giving us the background. So it flowed pretty well, but just reader be aware. It took me a little bit to get into it. I will say though, audio is the way to go for this because I was immersed. I was into it. I think if I had been reading it on the page, it might have felt a little bit too detailed for my taste. But overall, I do recommend this. This one was The 90s by Chuck Klosterman.
Okay. That's kind of unusual because usually authors who narrate their memoirs, that's usually always the best narration. Yeah.
So it's nonfiction, right? And honestly, his voice is just, it's just unique. It almost sounds like the funny scientist up from The Simpsons.
Oh, no.
Which if you know that reference, and I don't mean this as like as a dig. Like, again, I know that I don't have like the best speak. I'm not like Julia Whalen over here. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, what an interesting choice. Like, it really caught my ear for a while until I finally settled in and I got used to it. And then I liked it. Then I was like, oh, okay. It's the author telling us a story, telling us about his research. That's kind of cool.
It sounds like, it took your ears a little bit of time to adjust.
Yeah. To a couple chapters. So okay. Exactly. It. Just a note I wanted to make.
Okay.
So what about you? Tell us about your celebrity memoir book.
Yes. I have two books. And the first is Sex and the City and Us, How Four mm-hmm. Single Women Changed the Way We Think, Live, and Love by Jennifer Armstrong. Now, this actually came out in June of 2018, so it's not as old as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. I did listen to this. I highly recommend the audio. It was fantastic. She narrates most of it, and then she has another audiobook narrator. But I really didn't even notice two voices, actually. I was so into the story. She is the author of Seinfeldia. So,
oh, no way.
Yeah. So she's very, very into writing about iconic shows. And I am so into Sex and the City. I loved it when it was on. You know, I know Tina's like looking at me like, we know you love it. But I did. I loved everything about the first show, the first series. I even loved the bad second movie. And mm-hmm. I'm especially into this current season. So what this book is, though, is how was Sex and the City created? So you go all the way back to Candace Bushnell, and she wrote Sex and the City. And I mean, can you even believe I did not put two and two together? And Candace Bushnell and Carrie Bradshaw, mm-mm. same initials.
I didn't either until you just said that.
So Carrie is really inspired by Candace herself. And Candace had
that
a boy.
Makes sense.
Yeah, Candace had a boyfriend who was Mr. Big. He was a publisher. Oh, and so to find out all these little details and how she ended up meeting with Darren Star, how they just created this show. If you love the show, you will love this book. And also how it's set in our culture, because HBO was one of the first to bring a show like this with women talking about sex and being open and being honest. And it was out there and it was revolutionary in some ways. Mm-hmm. With what they talked about with female friendship and life in the city. And of course, New York City is a character, which I just love. I loved learning how they put this show together, how they created it, how they casted it from them.
That's what I was curious about.
Oh, you find out all of it. You find out all of those details. Oh, I don't know if I want to tell you this or not. Let me see if I can tell you this without spoiling anything. The way they created each show was somebody one of the writers, somebody involved in the show had to have a true factor. So every single show was inspired by something true.
Amazing.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, every, and you know how many wacky stories they had.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They're wacky. But I'm also like, yeah, I could friggin' see that. Like, I can see them going to, like, a restaurant called Bed where they just lay around and like that. Like, and that was a real place in New York City. Like, that tracks for this show.
The relationship stories, like, somebody dealt with or heard about. Wait, or
did somebody break up with somebody on a Post-it?
I'm not going to tell you. They definitely explain the Post-it and how that came about.
I've got chills.
And you know what? The interesting thing was they go season by season and they give you the background and the behind the scenes on all of those major events. And Berger's Post-it note was one of them that, and the whole, he's just not that into you. Oh, I mean, I loved it. I mean, if you can't tell, I absolutely love this. It's something I will probably even maybe listen to again. So that was Sex and the City and Us, How Four Single Women Change the Way We Think, Live, and Love. And I do want to point out, which I forgot, but the author does a really good job of bringing it back to, well, 2018, kind of current day, as far as some of the show's shortcomings. And that gets discussed. It gets touched on. It gets discussed. It gets pointed out. There, the racial, some of the cultural, and some of the sexual insensitivities that were present in that show. That's also discussed. So this is a balanced look at Sex and the City.
Okay. Well, you've sold me. Here's what I want. I need to listen to that. However, I really want to go back through and like watch all of the episodes. Mm-hmm. And quick plug here, I just realized that our guest, Danny, he is doing for his patrons, he is recapping the old seasons of Sex and the City, which I'm sure is just amazing and super fun.
Yes.
But this show is just, I remember watching it in college with my college roommate in our dorm on DVD. We would like watch it and I'm like, oh my gosh, these women are grown. These women are grown because they were a little bit old, you know, they were whatever, 30s, I guess. And I was 30s, in college. Right. But gosh, what a fun book. I'm so glad you explained that.
Yes. And your experience with the original show is completely different than mine, because when I started watching it, two years, I think, after it released. I started in 2000, but I started at the beginning. I think I got the DVDs. But I had I was at home in the evenings with a 2.5-year-old and a newborn. And so for me, these women were living lives that were so glamorous and, so completely different experiences with this same show.
Yes. I'm going to read it, and we're going to also, teaser, we're going to have, Renee's been talking about this. She wants me to finish the current season.
Yes.
We've only seen two episodes. I'm going to finish the current season, and then we're going to have a little book talk after dark so we can chat about it.
Yes.
As Renee's birthday present for February. That's neither here nor there. I have a really good question. It's been on my mind for a couple weeks now since we've, been planning this episode. Here's what I want to know. What do we think it is about certain books that gets them into the cultural zeitgeist? And what I mean by that, think Gone Girl. Why did that book catch on like wildfire? What is it? Great story, kind of first of its kind, but what is it? Why are certain books able to transcend and get into the public perception outside of those that read a ton of books all the time?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what it is.
I think you partly answered what I was thinking. Yeah, well, I was thinking, which was it was one of the first to drop that sort of narrative structure of what we thought we were reading, we weren't really, it wasn't really accurate.
It turned things on
its
head.
The unreliable narrator. And I think word of mouth. And so I remember picking up Entertainment Weekly, which I don't remember what year that was, but between Entertainment Weekly and People Magazine, that's how I found out about new books. That was it for the most part. And I remember seeing the Entertainment Weekly profile Gone Girl. And I was like, oh, that sounds good. So then, I think from there, from people reading it and being wowed, and then I think it caught on like word of mouth wildfire.
Yeah. I honestly think you're onto something. It's those word of mouth books that gets the buzz going. I really believe that. I think now there's almost like a very simple answer to my question, and the answer is TikTok. Unfortunately or not, it is TikTok right now. I think us bookstagrammers are like the kind of like, hey, in my day, we had to make a post and write a caption about it. But anyway, I think there is something to be said for TikTok because I know certain books have just friggin' launched into the atmosphere with popularity.
I think social media is the modern word of mouth.
That's true. Social media is the modern word of mouth. And I think you're right. I think you're right. That's how it gets people excited. Gosh, I'm trying to think like what book has been in the pop culture atmosphere as heavily as Gone Girl. I'm thinking Hunger Games has been. Even the Divergent trilogy was back in its time. Mm-hmm. Twilight, 50 Shades of Grey. All of those books really kind of caught fire.
Right.
And I'm thinking, too, they all have adaptations now at this point.
Exactly. I was chatting with a Barnes & Noble bookseller today who's my new favorite person. He's my new friend. I've never met him before. But he was talking about how they cannot keep The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo in stock. Mm. And because of TikTok.
Yes.
And I mean, it's wonderful. So amazing. It's wonderful for the bookstores. But it's very interesting that certain books are now blowing up.
Yeah. And I love that book specifically because I loved it. I thought it was amazing. But I'm also glad because I think TikTok skews younger than Instagram. It skews pretty young. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it makes me so delighted to see all of these younger readers just like out there talking about how they're bookworms, showing off their collections. Like I would have been so into TikTok if they had it when I was younger. I had so many books. That was my thing, was reading. But like, nobody cared. It was a thing you did. Like, right. You know, you went to the library, whatever. But like now I'm like so impressed with all these super young TikTokers, like really getting some of these books out there. So speaking of, that brings me to my book that I brought for this section about books that, you know, are really in the pop culture space. And of course, I had to bring Colleen Hoover if we're talking books on TikTok. I have read only two Colleen Hoover books at this point. So I'm not what you would call a scholar of the author. However, I think if I think about TikTok, she's probably one of the most popular authors on that platform. And I was trying to do some research and figure out why that is. And I found this really great article from Elle about how Coho became a pop culture phenomenon. And basically, they said that Colleen's books are a snapshot of our lives. They have threads of all genres, which is why I think her stories are so universal. Mm. And I liked that quote. I think that makes sense. And I wanted to try a book for hers for this episode. And so what I read was a book that just came out called Reminders of Him by Colleen Hoover. Again, this one came out in January. My only note that I had written down from this was, well, damn, this bitch can pull at your heartstrings because this book, I cried like 15 times. That's not a hyperbole. Oh, wow. When I was reading this book, I cried so many times because what it's about is a young mother and she's super troubled. The opening, as Colleen Hoover, I think, tends to do, you're dropped, boop, right into the action. You find out she's recently getting out of prison and going into this super kind of sketchy apartment complex. And she had just recently served 5 years in prison for a tragic mistake. And she, instead of going home to Colorado, she goes back to the town where it all went wrong. The reason she goes back there is because she's hoping to reunite with her 4-year-old daughter. So she gave birth while she was in prison. Already, I'm like, oh, the chills. Mm. Because of what she did, she burned a lot of bridges. And I mean, there's no right answer to this story. It's impossible. The family of the child's grandparents don't want anything to do with her, which I think makes sense because she was in prison for a reason that would have me pissed off too. But the only one that hasn't completely shut her out is this man named Ledger, who is a local bar owner. And he is pretty close to her daughter by reasons you'll find out. Basically, it's just about this story about a mother trying to prove herself. And it really, really made me think about who deserves a shot at redemption, who deserves a second chance. Are there some instances where the things that happened are just too bad that you don't get a second chance? And if that's the case, how do you come back from that? What would you do? I will say this gets pretty friggin' dark for good reason. I can't think of anything worse than being separated from your child. Now, the child's happy, don't get me wrong, but that was almost worse in some ways for this particular protagonist. I adored this book. I would love to chat with you, Renee, about this or any readers. I just thought, wow, okay, if this is what Colleen Hoover does, I understand why she is such a pop culture phenomenon. I don't want to say anything else. I really want you to just pick this up. I read this in a day. We recently went on a trip to Florida and we missed our airplane, whatever. It took us literally, I think, 12, 13 hours of travel to get back home. But I was okay because this book happened to drop that day and I downloaded it, read like 80% in one day. So it's that sort of story. You just want to immerse yourself in it. But it is really sad. Look up the trigger warnings for it because it really, really is touching, I guess. And that one was Reminders of Him by Colleen Hoover.
Okay. I don't think you mentioned, and people might be wondering, what's the other Colleen Hoover book that you read?
Verity, of course.
Oh, that's okay.
Verity, which you almost, as I understand it, that one's a little bit of an anomaly from the author. It's not her normal. Loved it. You read it and loved it too, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. Crazy story. Crazy. And I think that one deserves its moment. That one had a weird story too. I think it was self-published and then it caught on so well
for
obvious reasons because it's so friggin' crazy.
It's nuts. Yeah. But I've read a few of hers.
Releasing it. Have you? Okay.
Yes.
So do you like this author?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, okay. I haven't read everything, but I've read It Ends With Us, which I think that you would like. I think that's a good one.
That's the one that's on my list next. It's got a pink cover, right?
Yes. Yeah. Pinkish purple. Mm-hmm. That's a great one for discussion. I've read all her perfects. I've read Ugly Love and Verity.
Okay, so
and
I've read a few. Yeah. I'm going to definitely pick up more because I'm like, again, something about it. Gosh. And I guess that L article is right. It's a universal story. Like you can't help but put yourself in that situation and think, what the hell would I do? What would I do? And there's no answer.
I think she's really, really good at creating stories like that. Mm-hmm. I think, just off the top of my head of the ones that I've read, I think everyone had a storyline that everyone can think, I wonder what I would do. Or, you know, I don't know. She's really good at that.
She really has a gift, honestly. And to be so prolific, like, how do you keep coming up with new stuff? I don't know. Obviously, if I did know, I'd be rich. But anyway. Well, Renee, do you have another book for us?
Okay. I do have another book. I chose another pop culture book that's centered on pop culture. And it's Name Drop by Ross Matthews. Now, I did not know who he was when I picked this book. I saw that, you know, it was Name Drop and I knew he was kind of a celebrity person and he wanted to dish about celebrities. Okay. So what he does is really talk about celebrities and does a whole lot of name dropping and his experience with them. So what I found out is he was on E, he worked like E Red Carpet, RuPaul's Drag Race. I've never watched Big Brother, but I guess he won Big Brother or came in second on Big Brother.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I missed all of that. So maybe not the best choice for me because I really don't know much about him. And he does narrate it. And I did start off really enjoying this because he starts off with a Lady Gaga story. And I thought that was just great. And I love Lady Gaga. And he was really funny and about his experience with her. And then he shared his experience on The View with Barbara Walters. And that was really good. Really, really good. And he's very funny. What I didn't care for was each chapter started with a appetizer and cocktail recipe that the whole recipe got read.
I feel like you've had so many books lately where like the narration's like reading text messages an appetizer or something funky interrupts you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't need recipes read to me. So that threw me out of the story. And then his name dropping stories progressed with Celine Dion, Spice Girls, Liza Minnelli. And honestly, like those were interesting to me. So
yeah,
and Omarosa, I don't, mm-hmm. you know, no. So average is what I'm saying.
Cool.
And he's very, very, very high energy. If you like that, after a while, it was too high energy for me, too much on audio. But, you know, I learned some stuff about pop culture and I learned that Lady Gaga is as nice as what I thought she was based on his experience with her. And so I'm really happy I learned that. But that one's Name Drop by Ross Matthews.
Yeah, and Danny was saying he had met him once on Drew Barrymore's talk show.
That's
and that
right,
he was
yeah.
super nice. That he was super
oh, he
nice
seems
and very
like a great guy.
Gracious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know him from the talk show Chelsea Lately. It was a comedy show late night from, I don't know, several
do
years ago.
I do remember
Chelsea
when that
Handler.
Was on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he was on all the time. And I loved him. I thought he was so fun. But I completely see what you mean. Very high energy. Have to be in a certain mood, I think, for that type of story.
I think you're proud. Yes.
And
I
when
think
you are,
exactly.
you are. You're mm-hmm. like, tell me the gossip. What's happening here?
Might be good. Might okay. be best to take something like that a little bit like daily, like a little chapter, and then don't do another one until the next day and just kind of
if
work
you
your
like
way through it that way.
Up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, do you have a shelf edition for us?
I do. Do you want me to share mine first?
Sure.
All right. I am going summertime. With my shelf edition.
Okay.
I am. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's called When We Were Bright and Beautiful by Jillian Medoff. It comes out July 5th of this year. And I know that seems really far away, but this one sounds so good. This is a family drama. It's billed as twisty. And what really got me, it's set on Manhattan's glittering Upper East Side, which, oh, I just love books set in Manhattan.
We could
Manhattan.
Literally read New York books forever.
We really could. So this one is about a 23-year-old girl named Cassie Quinn, and she returns to Manhattan after her brother, who was a junior at Princeton, an athlete, he's white, he's privileged, he's arrested for sexually assaulting his girlfriend. So his family, who sounds very wealthy, proceeds to hire the best and the brightest lawyers as they get ready for a trial that is sure to be a media frenzy. So at the same time this is happening, she is struggling to understand why her brother's girlfriend would go this far, even if the breakup was painful. So it sounds like she's having doubts about her brother and his guilt or non-guilt. And then she also has a love affair that is over that she is dealing with, a long-term affair with a powerful, charismatic man, and something gets exposed with her dark secrets as the media frenzy starts with his trial. And I don't know, all of that together, it sounds really, really good to me. So that is When We Were Bright and Beautiful by Jillian Medoff.
Yeah, that one sounds really good. I like that perspective. Well, yeah, it's an interesting perspective, right? Of like the sister and being mm-hmm. like, why did the girlfriend tattle? It sounds like. And
right.
sounds like they come from privilege. And I'm curious about the man's girlfriend and what she's from, you know, what background she has. So,
right, right. I like the sound of this one a lot. What do you have?
Okay, so my book came in the mail today. So I thought, hey, what better time to bring it than now? It's called Reservations for Six, and it's by Lindsay J. Palmer. This one comes out on May 10th. And what I liked about it, it is about a tight-knit group of friends. And they have a tradition that on everybody's birthday, the couples get together to celebrate. And they've been through everything together. They've had milestones. They've been there for each other through loss and disappointment. And you have Nathan. He is the very first to turn 40. And when the cake arrives, he makes a shocking announcement that basically ends the group of friends and they will never be the same again. Confessions follow, secrets get revealed, and one couple's crumbling marriage forces the other two to re-examine their own marriages and their own fault lines and what lies beneath. So basically, it's an examination of whether or not their bonds will be strong enough to survive issues like infidelity, infertility, middle age, waning passion, and other things that come up in relationships. And it says the answers may prove to be surprising. And a year after Nathan reveals whatever he reveals, the group comes together again for their tradition, for their birthday meeting, and every relationship gets fundamentally changed. They said this one is for fans of authors like Emma Straub, J. Courtney Sullivan, and Rebecca Searle. So I'm like, okay, this sounds good. It's full of wisdom, humor, and heart. And it basically is shining a spotlight on that part of marriage where you've been married a while and mm-hmm. you're like, okay, you know, we have kids, we don't have kids, what have you, what's going on? How do couples cope and either come together or grow apart? So I thought this one sounded really good. I can't believe it. I'm like 40. Oh, right. That's like almost me. So this is almost my friend group. Give us a couple of years and this will absolutely be us. This one's called Reservations for Six by Lindsay J. Palmer.
That sounds really good. That's very new to me. I'm glad you brought that.
That's it for today. We thank you for spending a part of your day with us. Links to all the books mentioned can be found in the show notes. And honestly, thank you so much, Dani, for joining us on our podcast. We had a blast talking to you, and we wish you all the success. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can help us by following us wherever you listen and by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get our podcast out to new listeners and grows our audience. And don't forget, if you would like access to exclusive bonus content, you can join us for $5 a month on Patreon.
Feedback and questions about the show can be sent to booktalketc@gmail.com. You can also connect with us both on Instagram @booktalketc, Tina @tbretc, and me, Renee, @itsbooktalk. Talk to you next week. In the meantime, remember,
everything's better with books. Oh, no, it was lovely. I was listening to your Sex in the City episode, and then I bounced into Salt Lake, too. But I'm not ready. I'm not ready for Salt Lake chat. I mean, those girls.
There's a lot happening over there. A lot happening.
To keep track of. Renee is not a Real Housewives person, much to my chagrin.
Renee, come on.
I know. I'm sorry. I've watched one Ultimate Girls Trip, the first episode, and... But that's I don't know.
That's hard to jump into too because you don't know the people. So it's hard to, and that one was a little bit different than the other ones too. It was.
Tell me where to start real quick. Tell me like where should a brand new person start?
I think like New York is a good place to go. Early seasons of New York are pretty good. You could even start with like season 2 or 3. And I think you'll know some of the people, I'm sure, from just like Bethany, and I'm sure you'll know some of the
Ramona,
some
crazy
of the
eyes.
Stuff as it comes up. Yeah, but like season three of New York is where I always recommend people start.
Perfect. That's what I needed because I know Tina watches a ton because I'm a soap opera. I grew up on soap operas. I'm older than both of you. And
they're sort of the modern, it's sort of the modern day soap opera. I mean, it's, they're very similar in tone. My mom always watched General Hospital and All My Children growing up. And so I watched them with her when I was really young and she would watch them at night. And so, yeah, I think they are very similar in sort of tone, and they have people coming in and out and there's drama and all that stuff.
You'll like it, I promise.